Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this week I'm joined by our friend from Krypton Report, Tyler Patrick. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, man. See, last season we had you on for Stray, so the natural return appearance for you would be this season's Ryan.
The sequel.
Yeah.
One of the few episodes I feel like has a direct sequel.
That's true. I mean, they have a lot of plot lines they set up and follow up on in later seasons and stuff, but a true like part one, part two, if you will, which focuses on the same character. This is one of the rare instances of that in Smallville, for sure.
I feel like if Smallville would have come out like in the 90s, this would have been released on VHS as a Smallville movie.
Yes. You remember when the Flash, the original 90s Flash, came out with those? They had like about three tapes of the Flash, and it was like the pilot movie. It was one with the Trickster, and then there was another one. I think it was with the Nightshade, which was like their old superhero in that universe, who was basically the Sandman. That's exactly what they would have done. Like two on one VHS tape. What a deal, right?
Exactly. They would have made it like it's the movie. Just like, remember when Batman Beyond aired and it was two part of the pilot? They released it as the Batman Beyond movie on VHS.
Yeah. Oh, man. How far we've come since those days, right? So.
Oh, my gosh. People are going to be like, Solomon was at, my little boy was at my wife's grandparents' house, and he's playing with their VHS player, VCR. And I was like, yep. I'll have to explain to him what that is one day, and he'll look at me like, I don't understand.
That's true, man. Like, I still have my VCR and VHS tapes, and I'm glad I do, because I have to get several of my Smallville promos off of them, you know, because I was, like, posting the Smallville promos for the episodes, and a lot of them are not on YouTube, so I'm glad I still have my VHS tapes to reference for that. But, hey, it's just a fun niche technology. Like, I actually collect Laserdiscs. That's kind of a weird thing that I do, in addition to doing a podcast.
No,
but
it's one of those things. I remember the first time I saw a laser disc, I was like, "Wow!" I'm like, "That's so cool!" And then before I knew it was DVD.
Right. I mean, laser. It really is like this lost evolutionary link between VHS and DVD, because it was a giant DVD, you know, and it's the first digital format we had. Although technically it was analog. You can get all that weird. Weird conversation if you want, but I like this outdated technology. I mean, hey, look, records are coming back. Vinyl, apparently that's cool. So I'm just waiting for the VHS and the Laserdisc to come back, huh?
Well, it's just kind of like how you can download apps for your phone to make it look like it's recording on a VHS player.
That is the weirdest app ever, right?
I'm like, okay, instant retro. Like, yeah, I found this old VHS tape. You record it with your phone or with an app. No, I didn't.
I'm sure they'll shoot a low-budget horror movie like that someday. But anyway, so we're here to talk about Ryan this week. And, you know, in the Smallville Official Companion, Season 2, by Paul Simpson, Kenneth Biller had this to say about this episode. I knew that Alan Miles wanted to bring Ryan back because he was one of the favorite guest stars from Season 1. It was another risky thing. Did we want to kill a kid on television? A kid the same age as a lot of our audience? It was about what happens when you can't save everyone. Even though you're Superman with all these powers, running really fast or being really strong isn't going to help. Our most successful episodes are where Clark has a trial and has to learn things that aren't easy, and then is changed by it. He has to watch this young friend of his die. So there's that. And then Al Goff had this to say, it wasn't just a guy we met at the beginning of the episode. At the end, you think he's going to be okay, and he's not. It's part of Clark's journey to adulthood. It's one of the things we learn. People die, and life's not always fair.
And I agree. Like, in my notes, I put that I love that this was an important lesson for Clark as a hero, as a person, as an individual, as someone who sees himself with all these powers, that he can't save everyone. Even though I sat there for a while and thought, well, if this had happened in season 10... what could have been different? I was like, could he have combined his heat vision and micro vision and like x-rayed, zoomed in and used like a controlled heat, like a laser, and shrunk it or something, or use the fortress technology?
Right. Yeah, there is, once you start getting into the crazy sci-fi fantasy world of the true comic book world, Smallville and later seasons, I see your point. But, you know, this is, you know, like, not to get our heads ourselves right, but hey, that is a bold move, you know, killing a minor. Right? On broadcast television like that. And Yeah, and this is a death that sticks. I mean, a lot of deaths on any kind of genre show don't, but you know, Ryan dies and he never comes back, and you really feel that loss because like Al Goff said, like, this is a character we had an established history with, so that's why it carries a lot more weight than some guy you just met, you know, 45 minutes ago. To man, this guy, I mean, he was last season and he was a fan favorite, and yeah, you know, and I'm of two minds of it really, because it's like you wanted that kid to have a happy ending, right? He had such a tough life. And yet, you know, but then at the end, you know, he tells Clark, look, I don't want you to be mad or sad. You know, you changed my life, you know, and that's the kind of hope that Superman brings to people. And that's why he's my favorite hero. So.
Agreed. Like, I can't say it better.
All right. And that's all for this episode of Always Alone in the Smallville. I think we've said it. Let's go ahead and jump into the episode discussion proper. Ryan.
Bought you some comics.
Clark beat you to it.
Yeah. Well, I bet he didn't bring you number 66.
That's the rarest issue there is.
That's because it's the one where Davilicus turned against Warrior Angel.
Weren't they best friends?
Once upon a time.
And what happened to him?
Well, they ruled the Guardian Realm together until Davilicus told Warrior Angel that they should join forces and conquer humanity. Together, no one would be able to stop them.
What would Warrior Angel say?
He refused. He believed it was a hero's sacred duty to protect those weaker than himself. Davilicus thought he was naive and vowed to destroy him and everything he stood for.
Why do you think Davilicus went bad?
I'm not sure. Probably wasn't aware of it. You see, Ryan, in life, the road to darkness is a journey, not a light switch.
You should remember that, Lex.
Ryan is the eighth episode of Smallville's second season. It aired on November 12, 2002, was written by Philip Levins and directed by Terrence O'Hara. And we already off the top, we have a plus one for episode titles in the episode. Because the name of the episode is Ryan, and of course we have Ryan James in this episode. So off the top here, we have Ryan. He's doing the episode one Jedi test, isn't he, Tyler?
Oh yeah, poor guy. I you know what's funny is I thought of that, and I thought of Ghostbusters because my brother-in-law is a huge Ghostbuster fan, and he dresses up as a Ghostbuster for charity and stuff. Mm-hmm. And just that scene where Bill Murray's doing the psychic test.
Yeah.
And the guy guesses it right, and he's like, oh, sorry, wrong. I just watched that, so that was on my mind.
That's a good callback. That's good. Dr. Garner, as we learn his name is, he's conducting some experiments on Ryan's, I guess what a telepathy would be his power. And he's showing pictures, and Ryan is reading them back to him. And during all this, though, he's like in a very, you know, just sterile kind of lab. He's on a table. He's got electrodes hooked up to him. It is not a pleasant experience for Ryan here. And they keep pushing and pushing for more answers. And Ryan wants to stop. He has a headache. But they said, oh, let's push on through. And then he eventually starts to have a nosebleed. You know, so it's really starting to – something's really wrong with the way his abilities are working. So Dr. Garner sends his assistant to go get some medicine. And this is very clever. You know, Ryan uses his telepathy against him because he says, hey, what's this fill-in-the-blank drug? And Dr. Garner's like, oh, that's a very powerful narcotic. He's like, oh, well, what's his name over there stealing? He's like, oh, I thought so. And then he runs and gets him. And clearly Ryan had sensed the suspicion that Dr. Garner had and played that to his advantage. So now Ryan is completely alone in the room, and he used this opportunity to escape.
Which is genius. But, I mean, even this whole opening with Ryan hooked up, it just grabs you. Because, like you said, it's an established character that we really loved and liked, and we thought he got his happy ending in the first episode, but now here he is again, and we're like, immediately, like, oh my gosh, what happened to Ryan? He was supposed to be with his aunt. What's he doing here? And you're just like, immediately. And then, you know, Ryan gets free, and he's in the air ducts. And I thought to myself, I don't know if you've ever had this thought, how strong are air ducts?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm used to playing like GoldenEye and stuff, so you're calling around in the air ducts. I didn't really thought about it, but you're right. You see, in all these movies and TV shows, you see, you know, kids, adults, even, crawling around these air ducts. And you're right. Are they really strong enough to hold the weight of a person? I don't know. That's a good question. I'll have to test it sometime. Next time we get captured, I'll try to escape through an air duct and see how it turns out.
If I dropped in, I know that I would just be like, boom, just fall out of the air duct. Like, oh, didn't work.
Well, he does make his way out of the air duct, and of course, while this is going on, Garner and his assistant figure out what's going on. They start looking for him, and you know, Ryan makes his way to his phone, and he calls the Kents. So you know, it's a good thing this is back then, because you know, if I were captured today and I had an opportunity to escape and I got access to a phone, I wouldn't know what number to call. Because does anyone remember? I mean, a select few, right? I'm like parents, significant others, whatever. But the majority of all the phone numbers that I have, I don't know them. You know, they're just programmed in my phone, you know? So.
Yeah. You're like, 911, I guess.
But he calls the Kents, and Clark picks up the phone. And just as they, because you know, at first I was like, are they gonna like miss the call? Because Martha's like doing some work and Clark's like in the kitchen, and she's like, Clark, could you get that? He's like, yeah, sure. And it keeps ringing and ringing. I'm like, hey, pick up the phone, guys. This is important, you know. Clark picks it up, and Ryan is really freaking nice. Like, Clark, you have to help me. I'm at Summerholt. They're keeping me here against my will. You have to save me. And then at this point, Garner busts in, and they hang up the phone, and they inject him with a really big, scary looking needle, huh?
Oh. I was just like, because he's screaming, I'll be good. I'm sorry. Don't do that. And you're just like, and Clark, okay. He's like, Ryan, what's going on? Ryan. I'm like, Clark, he's yelling. How about you just calm down for a second and listen? Now, I had a brain fart here. But by this time, because I watched Smallville so much, and I watched that Out of Order recently. Does Clark have his super hearing?
No, he doesn't get that for quite some time.
That's what I thought, like, because I had been watching the latter seasons, and I went back to this to watch it, and I was like, I don't think he has it yet.
Right.
Because I'm like, why doesn't he use his hearing and just listen in? But, nope. That's what I thought. Whisper. Isn't Whisper when he gets it?
Yes, Whisper is when he gets it. And that's, you know, of all the episodes where he gets new powers, that's probably my least favorite. I felt like it felt really contrived. Like, they had to have, like, he had the heat vision kryptonite, it made him flying, and then he, like, compensated, like Daredevil style with hearing, but then it like he got a sight back and he had the glasses, and they just tried to shove way too much in there. It should have just been like a natural evolution, I think, of like, you know, yeah. he got stronger and faster. He should have been able to hear better as time went on. Because I never really thought it's heat vision and X-ray vision. Those are like flight, right? Super breath. Those are specific things. Super hearing is just like, oh, I can hear better than other people. That's the way I saw it. So
yeah, it's just an enhancement of an already developed skill.
Right. Exactly.
You know, like, you know, when the pilot started, he was fast and he was strong. Mm-hmm. And then his skin got tough, where he was invulnerable. And you think hearing would have been up there. Just like, I mean, what is it, season 5 when he gets his super breath?
Yeah, season 6, yeah.
By sneezing? Mm-hmm. Season 6, okay.
Which is super breath, like, and super breath, okay. And cold breath are always like, they're kind of interchangeable. You know, people kind of consider them the same power, but they do different things. But so all that to say that Clark is not really on top of things. Like, he's not really, you know, on the uptake, right? As all this is going on, what's going on? He's just kind of clueless. But then we cut to the opening credits, and we cut back, and it's the Kents all together at home, you know, after this phone call. And Martha reveals that she had called that Ryan's aunt, and the number had been disconnected, and there had been no forwarding number. So that mystery continues, because we're like, as you said, he was supposed to be with his aunt. He got a sappy ending. What, you know, what's up? How do you find himself in this situation? But Jonathan asked Clark if he talked to him recently, and Clark said, yeah, he sent me an email a few weeks ago. He was going to start school soon. He was really excited. So, you know, there was no indication that any of this was going to happen. But then we cut to the torch, and Chloe has once again used one of her many contacts, you know.
That we never see or hear of again.
Of Chloe course, knows, right?
I have in my notes here. Chloe knows someone everywhere.
It's pretty ridiculous. It's one of the most unbelievable things on this show. Yeah. How many people does she know?
With a guy who's an alien, the part that I can't wrap my head around is how much Chloe does for a school newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's a conversation you could literally have in every episode, right?
I still feel like she should have just been an intern at the Smallville Ledger. Mm. And then did the torch also, but most of this should have been based out of the Smallville Ledger.
Well, they probably wanted to have them all at the school, you know? I mean, so they could have more scenes there. But you're right, it would be a lot more reasonable if, you know, Clark and Pete stopped by the Ledger, you know, after school, as opposed to, like, because I always wonder, like, when are they having these conversations at the torch? Is it in the middle of the school day? Right? Is it like in their newspaper period?
School,
like, yeah, before school? Because as we know, these kids get up like at 5 a.m. apparently.
And the sun's up and it's bright. That's my favorite trope in all shows when they're like, oh, you better get to school. I'm like, what time is it?
It looks like it's noon outside.
I'm like, I got up for school and watched the sunrise and I was half asleep racing to school to be there by 8.
Exactly.
I'm lucky if I had breakfast. These kids are up, huge meal. Played a game of basketball, showered, parents are leaving for work. I'm like, what time is it?
Exactly, man. That is always the question on Smallville. What time is it? What day of the week is it? Who knows, right?
Where I've been listening to the show more and more, I kept track of all of Clark's outfits in this episode and how many times he had a different outfit on. And based on the fact you never see him in the need to change, this episode feels like it could have taken over a week long.
Well, that's great. You know, I'm very proud of this episode for Clark wearing lots of different outfits and none of them being the red jacket, blue shirt. You know, we got the red shirt, blue jacket, but we didn't get the red jacket, blue shirt. So,
yes. Okay. We're going to jump this real quick. I know it's not really spoilers, but we have a blue jacket with a blue plaid shirt with a blue t-shirt. All right. We got blue jacket, red flannel, blue shirt, brown jacket, which I always like that, like the brown Carhartt jacket. Sweater, blue jacket, a white blue flannel, the brown jacket. But then my favorite was the yellow t-shirt and the yellow flannel. That was just awkward.
Oh yeah, underneath the flannel, right?
Yeah, I was like, you're trying something here, but that's just not working.
No, I used to thank you for the Clark Kent fashion report there, Tyler. I used to dress this way in high school, sort of. Like I got like flannel shirts and stuff like that. Just because, like, once again, I wanted to be like Clark Kent, this unhealthy relationship I have for this show.
Who didn't? I have a couple of shirts that my wife, that I still wear flannels, and I have a couple of shirts upstairs. My wife's like, that was your Clark Kent shirt, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. The more she watches Smallville, she's like, and she looks at pictures from high school, and even now, she's like, you took a lot of fashion from this.
Yeah, it's funny. People can tell, like, because when I did a lot of work in television, I got to meet John Schneider and Ava Marie Saint. So I got to meet them and get my picture with them. And I intentionally wore, like, it wasn't a flannel shirt, but it was like this red, like, checkered shirt that I always wear when I go to the rodeo and stuff. And, like, it was very intentional fashion choice that day. And somebody was like, you wore that shirt on purpose, didn't you? I'm like, yes, I did. So.
You're like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. Here.
I heard one of your passes. You're talking about how you always dressed. You're talking about your default costume being Clark Kent or Superman. That was always mine as well. But I used to go to school. Sometimes I'd wear a Superman t-shirt. Then I'd intentionally wear a white dress shirt over top of it with a blue tie.
Mm-hmm.
And then people would be like, oh, I can see through your shirt. And I'd be like, yeah, because it's Superman.
I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before, but I at our homecoming dance in 2003, so I was a junior in high school, I wore a Superman shirt under my outfit for the evening, and it was a blue dress shirt, so you couldn't see through it. So you got to think these things through, Tyler. I might have told this on the podcast already. If so, sorry, and I'm sure I'll tell it again. But so I got, you know, everybody like kind of around in a circle. For some, I somehow commanded everyone's attention, like as a group of us, you know. I'm like, what was that? And then I rip my shirt open and I run off. Apparently, everyone thought it was pretty funny. Anyway, I'll have to ask Lance what the reaction. Lance was there, one of our many friends who was there. So next time he's on the podcast, I'll have to ask what everybody's reaction was. I forget, but because I just ran off, you know, because that's what you got to do. But it was a big hit, and it went over well. And I knew my crowd, I knew my audience, my friends were all. They all knew what I was all about, and so it was a good time. But that's always fun. But all that to say that Chloe has used her sources to find that the Summerholt Neurological Institute is not in Edge City, which is where Ryan had been previously with his aunt, but it's in Metropolis. How convenient, right? It's in Metropolis.
Seriously, can't be anywhere else.
All right. So that's our next step towards that story. And then we cut to Lex, and Lex is at the mansion, and who is there? But Mayor Tate, played by none other than William B. Davis, the cigarette-smoking man himself. Now, are you a fan of The X-Files, Tyler?
Yes. So, I'm not a super fan. There are some gaps in my viewing just because of when it aired, and I've been trying to catch up, you know, since it's on Netflix. But I did enjoy the X-Files.
So, I mean, this is a huge genre guest star for them to get, I think. I mean, William B. Davis, like, instantly recognizable he plays the mayor of Smallville here. And, you know, I will say he's only in two episodes, and I feel like he was underused. What about you?
Oh, I agree. I mean, not to jump ahead in this episode, but just that whole how it ends where Lex is talking to him and basically states, I'm going to put my support and everything behind your opponent. And he's like, all it takes is speeches about outsider interest. And he says, no one likes you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could have been a whole episode right there.
Right.
Of just the two, you know, Mayor Tate trying to run for re-election and then Lex helping the opponent. So, I mean, that could have been just more, and that could have helped spark later when Lex decides to run for Senate.
Right. It could have tied into a lot of political things. I mean, we got all these main characters running for political office later on in the show. So if they could have, you know, had the foresight to tie that stuff together. But look, I mean, look, it's awesome they got William B. Davis, and it's awesome to see him in other things because, I mean, he's been in other things, right? But nobody knows him for anything else but the X-Files.
Did you see what was hanging up in Lex's office?
No, what's that?
Well, like, it's one of those things, like, the more you watch the show, you look at the behind the scenes, just like how Veritas was never there, then all of a sudden shows up in the stained glass. But if you look, when it pans to Lex talking, there's Warrior Angel comic book hanging on the wall.
Really?
In the background.
Okay. I feel like I'm sure this is the only episode that's in. Because,
yeah, exactly.
Of course, he shows it to Ryan later. So, come on, guys. Interesting. I know. I had not noticed that at all. But, I mean, that is very Lex. I mean, you think they would... I'm going to have to keep an eye out for that in future episodes. You think they just would have left it there, a set decoration, right? Like, that's exactly something... That's what you do when you collect that stuff. When you go... When the people go buy Action Comics for $1 million, whatever they spend on it, you know, that you hang it in your display case in your, you know, library, and that's what Lex would do. But interesting, interesting. But him and the mayor, Mayor Tate here, they kind of have a back and forth, and Lex says, we have another mention of LexCorp, which is a big obsession of mine on the podcast, as you've probably heard. He says, quote, LexCorp is in the midst of a major plant expansion. So, you know, that explains that. And that's why he's talking to the mayor, because, you know, there's a lot of red tape and political red tape that he has to go through. And the mayor basically lays out to him that, you know, when Lionel was here, that he knew how things worked, and basically wants a bribe from Lex to get that plant expansion approved and passed through. And Lex has no part of it. And he has this to say to Mayor Tate. He says, let's be clear. I don't work for my father anymore, and it's not his plant. LexCorp owns it. So I feel like this is like the most explanation we have gotten the entire series about what happened to the LuthorCorp plant, huh, Tyler?
Yes. And, you know, like I said, I listen to the show. So as I'm watching the episodes, I take note because I put that in here as well. Like, LexCorp. All right. Mm-hmm. Good. You know? And I feel like in right here, Lex is really trying to be a good guy. Like, he's like, it's going to give all these jobs to people here in Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, and I feel like in this episode, it's really Lex being a good guy.
Right.
And I mean, he later on, I don't want to jump ahead, but he has a great, what he says to Ryan, I think is a great quote that helps sum up his character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is an excellent, you know, this episode is, you know, great, I think, overall. But more than anything else sticks out to me is the interaction between Lex and Ryan, and just the examination of, you know, Lex, and because Ryan has a unique insight into him, right? Because he can read his mind, so he knows his intentions, and they have some good analysis here of what he's all about. But yeah, Lex wants no part of this bribery thing, and so, you know, Mayor Tate is so cocky here. He's like, he gives Lex a business card. He's like, call this man. He'll explain to you how things work. And he leaves. And that is such an X-Files thing. That's something that cigarette smoking men would do. So, you know, I almost wish he would have been smoking a cigarette, but I feel like it would have been too on the nose, right?
or they could have just had him putting the cigarette out, like, Mr. Luther will see you now.
Oh, yeah, something like that, yeah.
And walks in.
Usually that stuff would really, like, but I'm sure if they did do that, I would complain about it. Like, oh, it's too on the nose. So I don't know. You can't win with fans.
Isn't
we're gonna
that
find
just
a way
the
to
whole
complain.
Warrior Angel thing? Like, you know, I even have that here. Like, sometimes I feel like the whole Warrior Angel is too on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah. No. We can. Yeah. I definitely want to get into that later, especially when we start talking about Davilicus and stuff. But so we cut from this scene to Lana. She's riding her horse, which is funny. I always forget that she's like into horses, and I'm like, oh yeah, Lana's on a horse because that's her thing apparently. But she's riding on her horse, and then Nell comes up to her, and you know. Basically says, oh, you know, Lana, I guess she tries to break this news easy to her, the way she goes about it. She's like, hey, you know, what if I told you that you could ride at the Metropolis Equestrian Center every day, anytime you wanted? And Lana says, I'd say it'd be a long drive, which is a funny response, which is, again, early Smallville establishes that Metropolis is kind of far away, right? It's not down the road. You can't, well, although in Nicodemus, you did see it from a windmill. It's, that was an aberration. That was a mistake. And I believe that
Clark supervision.
Yeah. That's what we saw it through, right?
He didn't realize he had microvision yet. He just zoomed in.
I think he's talking to Lois in season 10 and she's like, microvision. He's like, it's my power and call whatever I want.
Yep. So exactly. Exactly.
So Nell tells Lana here, he's like, well, Dean got a job in Metropolis and he wants us to move with him. And Lana is not a fan. She's like, what about my life and my friends and the talent? And, you know, she's not a fan of it. And I would have to agree because Nell, again, now look, Nell is not her mother. Nell is her aunt. And, you know, good on Nell for taking her in and raising her after her parents died. But Nell seems to be making a lot of, like, unilateral decisions for both of them without her insight. Like, not that Lana should have a say if Nell gets married to Dean, but I mean, she just dropped that bomb on her a couple episodes ago, and now she's dropping this bomb about how they're moving now, and so that's, I don't know. I don't know if that's fair or not, right?
Oh, I'm with you exactly. I mean, I've never been in that situation, but at the same time, I know, okay, for a fact, like I mentioned, my dad was in the military, and I remember him and I having a discussion. He told me that whatever was going on, he didn't want to make us move when my brother and I got old enough. Especially when I started high school, he didn't want me to have to be in and out of school. He wanted me to be able to go to high school, same place for the 4 years. That means if he had to deploy or he had to live somewhere else, depending on the situation, he was not going to make us move. And in that same, with that mindset, you know, high school is important to when you're that age and you do, you have friendships and, especially if you've grown up and you're in the last part, like Lana's what? Supposedly, I guess she's a sophomore.
Yeah.
Sometimes I felt like she was supposed to be older, but well, that's always season one.
That's what I'm saying. They don't realize when certain things happen in high school and how old people are, right? She's got two off periods this year. It's like no way, right? But no, she's exactly. To be generous, she's 16. Let's say that.
Yeah, I'm completely cool with that generosity. So you know, just the idea of, okay, you've lived your whole life here. You've grown up and went to all school with all these friends, everything you have. Over the past year, your boyfriend left and all that. And now here I am going to just uproot you the last 2 years. Yeah, I mean, it is tough, but it's definitely something I think should have been a discussion between. Because I figured they would have a different kind of relationship than parent-child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more of a, I don't want to say mentor mentee, but like a authoritative, you know, guardian, but there would be more of an openness to the relationship,
right?
That she would have brought this before Lana, but of course that wouldn't move the plot along and, you know, help write Nell out of the show.
Well,
so.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I feel like it's a huge loss because not that Nell was the greatest character, but she at least established that Lana had her own life going on. And this is the beginning of the universe shrinking of Smallville, right? It's like, because now, yes. You know, well, we'll get into it at the end, but the universe continues to shrink, and these characters that added, you know, layers to Smallville's world, you know, leave. So there's that, you know, and this, that could have been something if they really wanted to delve into it and give Lana, like, an actual story, like, in this episode and not just a couple of scenes here and there. They could have dropped, look, and I love the William B. Davis, Mayor Tate thing with Lex, but it's a couple of scenes, and they really could have gone in any episode, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That could have been in the next episode. We could have expanded upon it because it could have been at the time of near
election time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you move those scenes to another episode, and then you can expand the Lana Nell stuff and have them have honest discussions. Because you're right. I feel like we the only times we see Lana Nell together are like when she's dropping some big revelation on her, you know, and we never get to see those other more quiet moments that would help inform the relationship more the same way we get to see Lex and the Kents.
Exactly.
So then we cut to the Kents, and you know they're telling Clark, look, I was on hold with Summerholt all day long, and they told me to call back tomorrow, and Jonathan tells Clark that the police went and they checked, and Ryan wasn't there, and so they're getting no answers, and Clark wants to just go in there and bust down the doors, and Jonathan says, well, you can't do that, son. So to Clark's credit, he goes to Summerholt, and he waits in line at the reception desk, and he's talking to the receptionist, and she's shutting him down, but he's like, well, I'm not leaving until I know Ryan James is here. And Dr. Garner comes out, and he's like, well, was there a problem here? I'll handle it. And he basically just lies to Clark's face and says, nope, no one's here by that name, and I hope you find your friend, but he's not here. And I liked this part with Clark. He's like, well, I know he's here, and he really has some authority to him that I feel like this informs, like, later on in life where Clark will be, like, the investigative reporter where he can actually stand up for himself without being Superman. And I like this scene here between everybody.
Oh, I like it just because with this episode, I like best because it's something that's affecting it's something going on in Clark's life that's not really directly involved in his life. It's something that he cares about, and he's going to find out what happened. It's not the usual type of story that we get on Smallville. So I really like that, and I really like seeing Clark. He cares for Ryan, and he takes the initiative. And even though Jonathan's like, no, don't go, he's like, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he uses his vision and sees the restricted area.
Yeah, I think this is a case of a microvision before he knows he has it, right? Because obviously a normal human being could not read this chart that he reads that has like the restricted area stuff.
Exactly.
But when he sees it, he can bust into that restricted level and save Ryan. And I really got the feels in this episode, especially in scenes like this where you see Ryan, he's there, he's helpless, he's hurting, and Clark busts in and saves him, you know? And you can tell Ryan's just like, oh, Clark, I knew you'd come. He's like, oh, man, he did come, you know?
Exactly. Like, Ryan's a sympathetic character. Like, you just want to hug him.
Right. It's so true.
Like, you're like, I feel so sad for you. Like, you're so sweet. Like, you should be so angry, but you are so sweet and kind. And I love the orderly. You're not supposed to be here. And Clark's just like,
yeah, Clark looks pissed off when the guy comes in and just, you know, channels his anger into that guy. So he takes Ryan out of the hospital and takes him to Lex's, which is apparently where he takes all fugitives. Because remember back in season one in Hug, he brought Kyle Tippett there. So the Luther Mansion is the place to go, right?
I was like, Lex to the rescue.
Yeah.
Prison break. And then Clark's a horrible liar. That's one of the things I love about Clark is he can't. I mean, Superman's not supposed to lie. Mm-hmm. So when Clark tries to lie, it's horrible. Like, just lucky, I guess.
Right.
Lex, like, you're the most luckiest person I know.
Right, because, you know, the three of them are sitting there talking, and you know, Ryan's kind of explaining what happened, why he ended up there. He's like, well, his aunt moved to Arizona, and because he had been getting nosebleeds and headaches, and she had taken him to all these doctors. And from the story he tells here, which he expands on later, that the bills are getting too much, and Dr. Garner and Summerhold offered to, you know, pay for everything and quote-unquote take care of Ryan, which is why he ended up with them. You know, Lex is out of the loop here. He's uninformed of, you know, Ryan's abilities. So he's like, Ryan, what were they studying? What was wrong with you? And Ryan is like, I think he's about to tell Lex, and then Clark kind of cuts him off. He says, oh, he was holding him for observation. And at this point, that's when Lex is like, okay, Clark, can I speak to you? You know?
Yeah. He's like, you're taking him from a hospital for observation.
Well, I love what Lex said to Clark. Clark's like, oh, thanks for taking him, Lex. If I would have brought him home, my parents would have freaked out. And Lex is like, kidnapping tends to have that effect on people. Because he's like, Clark, you abducted a minor from, you know, I mean, we're all in trouble now. So let me call my lawyers in Metropolis, which, of course, I love it when Lex mentions his whatever, fill in the blank, from Metropolis, doctors, lawyers, whatever, right? And we'll see what options we have. But and then he's like, yeah, like you said, he's like, how did you manage to get him out of there without anyone stopping you? He's like, well, I'm just lucky, I guess, and you're the luckiest guy I know. So the suspicion, you know, continues to pile up. But Lex says, you know, he says that Ryan can stay the night, and, you know, like we said, he's going to call his people in Metropolis and see what he can do. So then Clark goes back to the kids. He's like, hey, Mom, Dad, guess what? And he finds that Sheriff Ethan and Dr. Garner are there waiting for him. And Garner demands that they turn over Ryan, and they're going to go over every inch of the Kent farm, and, you know, and you know, they should. Because technically, you know, Clark didn't go about it the right way. And I did like that Clark didn't just deny, like, I don't know what you're talking about, right? He's like, where's Ryan? You know, I thought he might play that card, right? But he was like, he's safe from you. So, he's standing up for himself and for his friend. So I like that. But obviously, the problem here is even though Ryan is not at the Kent farm, if they start going over every inch, they're going to find, you know, the spaceship, right? Nobody says it, but we all know that's the problem. So Clark says, okay, whoa. How about I give him to you tomorrow morning? And for some reason, they're cool with this. I thought that was a little odd.
I kind of felt that the doctor was kind of playing ball a little bit because
he knew he was wrong, pushed it.
Yeah, like if they really pushed it and started investigating, it's possible they could have discovered more of what he was doing to Ryan, mm-hmm. even though he was supposed to be Ryan's legal guardian. So I kind of took it that way, that he was like, okay, I'll give you till tomorrow, because that's what he agreed. He doesn't want to push it because it could backfire on him. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to look like he has the power and he's tough. But if somebody starts snooping around at his stuff, it could be bad.
Yeah.
They said Summerholt's not supposed to have patients. I mean, we already knew. He already lied that Ryan wasn't there. I mean, I would have false Clark. I'd be like, hey, didn't you tell me? I would be like, who are you talking about? Because I asked you about Ryan, and you said there was nobody by that name.
Well, there's a lot of ways that Clark could have played it. And so that's why I was actually surprised for him to just come out and say, yeah, I have him. He's safe from you. You know. So then we cut to the next morning, and Ryan comes to the Kents, because that's where they're going to make the exchange, the prisoner exchange, or whatever you want to call it. Unfortunately, they're going to have to give Ryan back to Summerholt. So, but then Ryan tells the Kents the whole story that his aunt was taking him around to doctors, true. But then when Dr. Garner found out, you know, something was wrong with his brain, that's what caused his ability. When his aunt found out about the ability, she freaked out. And I guess that made it a lot easier for her to give Ryan up to the hospital. And you know, Martha's like, oh, I'm so sorry, Ryan. He's like, she's not a bad person. She just couldn't accept the fact that I was different. And so once again, Ryan, he's just so understanding. Like, life kicks him in the face all the time. And he's just so loving and understanding to the world. Like, he could just be a bitter, angry kid, but he's not. And that's what makes him such a lovable character, right?
Exactly. As I said, you're like, you're not mad. Like, at anyone that you should be mad at, you're just... she's not a bad person. Don't be mad at her. She was just trying to do what she thought was best. And that's why she moved to Arizona.
So random, right? It's like, it's one thing to, like, if she had to, like, give Ryan up to a hospital, sure. But then why did she feel the need to move? But it was just, you know, all to create that mystery. But that's fine. That's fine. But then Dr. Garner shows up to take Ryan back. And the Kents don't want to do it. So, like, Clark and Jonathan are starting to speak up and get in the way. And it's really putting Sheriff – it's because Sheriff Ethan has driven Dr. Garner there. And it's really putting him in an interesting position, right? Because he's like, well, folks, I, you know, and right when he's like finally going to get something meaningful to do, right? Like have an actual impact on the story. Because Sheriff Ethan has been just one of these guys that's just always around and just a nice, friendly sheriff, you know? He's like almost was like going to get something important to do. Lex drives up and saves the day.
Lex to the rescue with his driving glasses.
Yes, the driving glasses. Thank you. Like, I don't know what this was in season two. I believe it's only in season two. Whenever we see Lex, he's driving around these convertibles, and he has these, like, driving glasses, sunglasses. I don't know. It's funny to see Lex Luthor in these glasses, right? But he shows up, and he has restraining orders and lawsuits and all this stuff ready, because Dr. Garner's like, well, blah, 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 blah. And Lex is like, well, blah, 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 blah. And they, like, keep one-upping each other with, like, well, I'm going to do this, so I'm going to do that. And ultimately, you know, Lex is in the right. Like you said, Garner was kind of playing ball because he was in the wrong, because Lex says, well, you know, I believe the Metropolis Police Department would be very interested in your, you know, in your practices there at Summerholt. So he withdraws, and then, you know, they were going to arrest Clark, and they withdraw all that. So all of everything with Summerholt is now resolved, at least for the time being, right? Because, you know, yes. Lex has tied all the stuff up with legal matters. So then, you know, Dr. Garner, he says, your rich friend saved you today, Clark. And that's the last we see of Dr. Garner for now. He is a returning character, which is another great part of Smallville continuity. You know, it's own Smallville's own mythology, you know, Summerholt and stuff like that. And that name even comes up in the series finale. Right, so that's a long-lived name there, but Dr. Garner is played by Martin Cummins, and he's just a regular guest star on things. He's of course been on Smallville. He was in Dark Angel. He was in Kyle XY, V, the reboot of V with Laura Vandervoort. He was in Eureka. So he's been in a lot of stuff. So if you watch TV, you've probably seen this guy's face. And I thought he was a very effective villain. He wasn't over the top, you know. He did his job.
I took him as a real person, you know.
Yeah,
a real
exactly.
Doctor who's trying to, like, he stumbled upon a patient that can reap benefits. And I always thought, like, he knew in the back of his mind, because Ryan even said, you're afraid you're not going to get your research done, that mm-hmm. Ryan was going to die. And he's trying to get everything done before Ryan dies. So, I mean, I take him as a doctor, like, mm-hmm. and I accept him as a good villain.
Yeah, because he didn't have some, like, crazy plan to use your abilities to take over the world. He was just a guy that was just interested in this very abnormal case that could theoretically, if you could unlock the secrets of it, could lead to a lot of new exciting medical developments. So, anyway. But now that all this is settled, they have a welcome back Ryan party at the Talon, right? So it's like, it's kind of a surprise party, you know, and I love this moment where, you know, everybody comes surprised, and I go up to them, they say hi and stuff, and everybody walks off. And there's a great moment here between Clark and Ryan, and he's like, you knew about this all along, didn't you? And he's like, yeah, about half a block away. It's just a fun moment, you know.
And I love the party, but I love how there's pistachio. Was it cake or ice cream? And I was like, who has pistachio?
I love pistachio ice cream.
I'm like, but I mean, it's not the first thing I think of when someone's like, let's have a party. I'm like,
that's true. Pistachio. Yeah. I'm if I'm bringing ice cream to a party, I'm going to get like chocolate, you know?
Yeah.
But if I'm buying it for myself, I'm going to go pistachio. Yeah. Neapolitan, something for everyone, right? But pistachio is a hard choice. And apparently Ryan didn't like it. That's why he was like, well, I was tempted to blow it because I hate pistachio, but, but then they even mentioned that they have a band. Right, which is like a house band at the talent. So this is Von Ray. They're playing Inside Out. Turn me inside out. It's a catchy tune, and it's actually on the Talon mix. You know, the Smallville soundtrack they released on CD. So that it's probably a more famous song than it would be otherwise. But it was featured on the on Smallville Volume 1, the Talon mix. So which came out? I believe it came out. Well, it did. It came out later this season because we have our product placement Pete in that episode where he literally hands Clark the CD that it's on sale at stores. So I love that. Well, speaking of Pete, Ryan's talking to Pete at the party, and Pete's like, hey, man, good to have you back and all this. Then he walks off, and Ryan gets all concerned. He's like, oh, my God, Pete knows your secret. He's like, oh, it's fine. I told him. And Ryan's like, well, did you know he's always worried about it? And then he's always worried he's going to slip up, and they're going to take you away and lock you up like they locked me up. And Clark's like, no, I didn't know that. So it's interesting, you know, whenever Ryan's around, he can expose these things that characters are thinking that they never get to verbalize. Yeah, because then Lana comes by next, right? She's like, oh, Ryan, you know, good to see you again, all that stuff. She gave him a kiss earlier, and he's like, oh, it's amazing. And then she walks off, and Ryan's like, hey, Clark, you know Lana's moving to Metropolis? Which was very interesting, because that's exactly what happened in the last episode Ryan was in, when he's like, hey, Clark, you know Lex is moving to Metropolis? So.
I feel bad because always like Ryan's always dropping bombs on Clark.
Yeah.
Every time he shows up, he's like, hey, Clark, did you know this? No. Ryan, maybe you should stay around for a while.
Yeah. Like he said in Straight, like, I can stay around. I can be helpful. You know, it's true. I mean, who wouldn't? I don't know. It's like knowing what people think is a double-edged sword, right? So that can go both ways. But yeah, you're right. Ryan's just revelation after revelation at the party here. And so then, you know, we cut to later that night, and Clark is I love the books they choose to show Clark reading. He's reading The Idiot's Guide to Understanding the Brain. It's just, I'm sure the secrets to Ryan's condition will be found there, Clark. But Lana comes to visit him, and he's like, oh, Clark, I got your message. What's up? And, you know, honestly, he wants to talk to her about moving to Metropolis, but he doesn't want to just come out and say it. And I was very glad they didn't have him say, like, so I hear you're moving to Metropolis. Oh, I have my sources, or some BS, right? That could never be explained, right? I'm glad exactly. That he encouraged her to say it herself.
Another one of those, like, Clark, you know too much about something, but you won't share about yourself type moments.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, she does open up to him, and you know, he's like, I'm glad that he even says, Lana, I know we're not as solid as we used to be, you know, because we had that horrible date that went terribly wrong. They haven't really properly addressed, in my opinion. But thank you for still talking to me after that, because you shouldn't. And two, you know, you can still, you know, I'm still here for you if you need me. So she does, you know, he kind of gently nudges her into the direction to open up about moving to Metropolis. That kind of thing would happen, like, in weaker episodes, he would just say something like, so you're moving to Metropolis. How did you know that? And then he'd come up with some stupid excuse that wouldn't make any sense, or they wouldn't question it or whatever, and then they would just tell him anyway. So I give them credit here for that. It's a very mature way of handling that kind of conversation. And, you know, she's not a fan of moving to Metropolis. And she says, quote, how would you feel if you were uprooted and sent somewhere far away where you didn't know anyone? And I'm like, I guess that's a Superman reference, huh, Tyler?
That's what I thought, you know, but I was like, but in the same respect, I'm like, I could see that being more natural.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other, like, what is it, Man of Steel?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, Clark Kent, Man of Steel, and leaping tall buildings in a single bound, yeah, and all that stuff.
Because, I mean, is it like we said earlier about Lana growing up in one place her whole life and then, you know, getting uprooted and having to move where she knows nothing.
Right.
Of her, not of her own choice. But then even with Clark, like, when he left Krypton, he was a baby.
Right.
He didn't know nothing.
It's more of a Supergirl reference than a Superman reference.
That's what,
right?
I say. We talked about that on Krypton Report. Was more about how, you know, the duality, and we're going to talk more about that as we record tonight's episode. But just, you know, she has history and then was uprooted and gone. Clark grew up here on Earth, so he doesn't have history.
Yeah, and then Clark mentions Henry Small, which is another continuity win. For Smallville, right? He says, have you talked to Henry Small about this? And she's like, no, I don't want to dump that in his lap. He may or may not even be my father. And just because, and even so, even if he's my biological father, it doesn't mean we're family. So I felt like that was, you know, good job, show, for one, bringing it up. Because I'm sure, you know, us as fans, you'd be like, what about Henry Small? She's her dad, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And so that was taken care of there. And then also, yes, you don't dump that into somebody's lap, as she says, right? When you're still in this initial stage of even figuring out if you are related or not, right? So I'm glad that was at least addressed, because that would have been a very easy thing for them to not mention and just brush over, and they didn't do it. And, you know, credit there.
Oh, I agree. I mean, Henry Smalls, I always thought that was an interesting little thing, and it gave Lana a story and helped evolve her character. You know, I mean, like we've talked about and you've talked about, Lana in the first few seasons is a really good character, but then somewhere in, well, I'd say season 4 is when you really start to hate her, because they run out of development for her and she just gets annoying.
Well, hate is a strong word, but I would say frustrated, yeah. Right?
Okay, I will say frustrated, because, I mean, yeah, you're right. Hate is too strong of a word. But you just get – it's kind of like when you watch a show and there's a character that you like, but the character's run its course.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were talking about this.
They keep that character around, and you're just like, yeah, I'm at the point now where I no longer like the character because – you overkept them.
Well, we've talked about this with Lionel before, and I feel like he fits that category. You know, I mean, all the back and forth. I mean, he peaked in season 3, and then all the back and forth between good and bad and all that. Now, when he came back in season 10 as Earth 2 Lionel, I mean, that was excellent.
We got that, you know, rest of season 7, season 8, season 9 break from the character.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got, but I agree. I mean, season 4 is when he supposedly starts to become good. And I mean, I like his arc when he starts to come and try to do good. But yeah, he kind of overstayed his welcome.
Right. Although it's like, John Glover is so good. You know, it's like, I'm glad we have him as long as we did. But yeah, I mean, that's the problem with when you have shows that they don't have, like, well, Smallville had a plan. They just decided to start deviating from their plan. And then what do, yes, right? Look at Heroes is the number one comparison I always bring this back to. Heroes. The show, characters on the show, everything. Everything outstayed its welcome. Stuff got recycled. Characters got diluted. Characters you loved, you started to not love them, you know? And that's just like exhibit A of what not to do with television shows and characters. Like, look, when the story is told, the story is told. You cannot keep, because it just, it retroactively makes the earlier seasons look worse because you know where the characters end up, you know?
Exactly. I mean, just like I was listening to your redo episode, your Redux episode.
In the French, I believe it's a redo.
Yeah. Yeah. I took French in high school, so I was like, oh, yeah, that's what I thought when I first saw it. You know, the whole, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Mm-hmm. And you could actually reference it in the show in 5 years, what he's doing. And I don't know if you – did you ever watch Supernatural? Like, it's still on?
You know, I did not. I know there's a lot of crossover between people that love Smallville and love Supernatural, but I just was never – it was never really my thing. So,
and I see, I referenced that a lot because I heard someone say that the series creator had a 5-year plan, and he executed his 5-year plan. But then he stepped down after the 5th season ended, and people that had worked with him took over. And I heard someone say that they look at it like the first 5 years are like canon, and then season 6 on is like extended universe.
Interesting.
Because like you just said, there's characters that outlive their welcome. They recycle story. They start a really good idea and then drop it too soon. And then I feel like right now they're in season 12 and they're bringing back threads and ideas that should have already been done. And they're starting to recycle a lot more. And it's one of those shows, I loved it. I mean, I'm a hardcore fan of the first 5 seasons, seasons 6, 7, 8. But then after that, I was like, there's just things they kept stumbling and messing up on. It's like they would have an idea and they'd rush it. And then I get to this point where there was nothing good.
Mm-hmm.
And I compare it, you know, with Smallville because, one, Jensen Ackles. And two, because Smallville was the longest running genre show until Supernatural passed it.
Right, until a couple of years ago, right.
Yeah. So, but we digress.
But hey, that's what we do on this podcast. It's all good. You know, Ryan and Martha are at the Luther Mansion, and she has to go work that day with Lionel or something like that, so she's dropped Ryan off there for a while. And, Ryan, we finally get to see Lex's Warrior Angel comic book collection that would have been referenced back in Stray, so we get to see that. And, of course, Lex says, you know, I always had 2 copies, one for reading and one for collecting. So a true collector, right?
Which makes sense, especially when you have that much money.
Right. Oh, yeah, as a Luther, I mean, spare no expense. But he shows Ryan, you know, Fantasy Comics number one, the first appearance of War Angel.
Did it look familiar to you?
Yeah. It is complete.
Did it remind you of something?
Homage to Action Comics number one. It's great. And not in like the cheesy way, because you totally get what they're doing. Warrior Angel is their superhero analog. And that's something we talk about on the show a lot, where it's like people say all these, you know, we were talking about, you know, Man of Steel, Leap Tall theories and single bound, stuff like that. Like, what would people say that in a world without Superman? Well, let's take it a step further. Like, would there ever truly be a world without Superman? If Superman didn't exist, surely our, you know, our public consciousness would conceive of a superhero character, right? Because it's like, because you watch all these shows and you're like, are you telling me there's no comic books in the world of Batman or something?
Yeah, but I was just about to say that. Like, there's, we know that in the world of Batman, we'll use that Zorro was real, and then we had the Gray Ghost.
Yeah.
That was referenced. But, you know, you have all these, like, different TV shows now that are all about superheroes, and none of them else, there isn't comic books. But they never, like, you never hear them get referenced or anything like
well,
that.
Well, I've heard this analogy. Have you ever watched The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Okay, I actually don't. Apparently, I watch nothing but Smallville. I don't watch Supernatural. I don't watch The Walking Dead. But don't they ever use the term zombie on it, though?
Right, they don't. They try to get around it.
It's like, and it's crazy. It's like, are you telling me that, like, oh, what is this undead person that I've never heard a reference to in any kind of film, television, or book, right?
You're like a hero, but you have superpowers. You're like a
superhero.
like later when Jimmy's like, you're like a super guy. I'm like, really? Really?
Exactly. So Smallville, like, it understood that was a vacuum that needed to be filled, and they invented this character of Warrior Angel, and I think it's great. And this character goes throughout the whole series, and that's part of what I call, like, the Smallville mythology. Right, in our last episode, Lineage, I was talking about how, you know, the whole Metropolis United Charities and all this stuff with Clark's adoption and all that, that's part of the Smallville mythology, right? It's not part of the Superman story, but it's their unique spin on it, and Warrior Angel is, like, their contribution to the greater Superman mythology. And I would love if, like, DC Comics, and maybe they have, and I don't know about it, but I would love if at some point they, you know, had showed somebody reading a Warrior Angel comic book and a Superman comic, right? That'd be great. But the Warrior Angel number one here is Action Comics number one, but it's called Fantasy Comics number one. It's got, you know, Warrior Angel picking up a car, and it just, if you've seen Action Comics, I'll post a picture of it on the social media so you guys can see, but an A-B comparison, but it's great. And, you know, they start to talk about, you know, comic books and stuff, and Ryan and Lex here, and Ryan asked Lex, you know, why he likes War Angel so much. He's like, well, you know, he got me through some tough times, and, you know, when you're a kid, it's, you know, good and evil is so defined, but, you know, he goes on to say that when you get older, you know, real life is not a comic book, and everything's in shades of gray. And this is one of those scenes where Ryan, like, he senses what Lex is thinking and all that, and, you know, he tries to kind of steer him, you know, away from it in his own way. He's like, well, your father said that, you know, you shouldn't believe that. And Lex is really starting to get suspicious of Ryan here now. But this is cut short when Ryan has a seizure and he starts bleeding. And he bled on the comic book, which is like, oh, no.
But that, it's okay. That was the issue to read, right?
Yeah, I hope so.
But, I wrote here that Lex sees himself more as the hero. And I think that's always, like, the definition of a great villain. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, later on, Lex refers to himself as the villain. That was a little on the nose, but, you know, at this point, he sees himself as a hero. And that was always something I thought I had to explain when people would say, why is Lex Luthor, like, such a bad villain, like, against Superman? I'm like, it's because he doesn't see himself as the villain.
Plus one for a hospital visits again, because Ryan is in the hospital. I could have counted, you know, the summer hole, but it has no patients, so it's a research facility. So I'm not going to count that. It's a nefarious research institution, right? So Clark buys Ryan the newest issue of Warrior Angel, and it has his Warrior Angel's Aerodrome. And Ryan explains that it's, you know, a place where it basically, look, it's the Fortress of Solitude for Warrior Angel, right? And Clark's like, well, it sounds like something everyone should have. This is where Clark reveals he has a fear of flying. Now, is this the first time he says that he has a fear of flying in the show?
I thought he said it sometime in season one.
Hmm.
I could be wrong because, like I said, I rewatched it all out of order,
mm-hmm.
which that's a whole funny reason why that happened. But, but yeah, I mean, he mentions he's afraid of heights. Maybe he says heights. I mean, that's what it is.
Maybe so. Oh, yes. Maybe the treehouse and Metamorphosis or the windmill in Chandler Field. Maybe one of those two instances. So
I think the windmill.
Because you think back so far. And everything starts to kind of, you know, blur together, you know. So I always like, oh, yeah, Clark's been afraid of flying. That's why he doesn't fly. And so at least, you know, they, of course, why would someone who's invulnerable be afraid of flying? But whatever, right? That is the mental block they always use to keep Clark from flying. So, and that's truly said here for the very first time. It just explained, not just heights, but flying.
I always took it as the mental block, but also once he embraces that, it's like he's seen so many people do things with having meteor powers, mm-hmm. and they're still human. And I just kind of always felt like once he accepts the flight, it's like he completely leaves being the human-esque mindset. Because nobody else ever flew except other Kryptonians.
Right.
Who somehow magically, when they show up, they have complete use of their powers and know what they're doing.
Well, they didn't have a fear of flying, Tyler.
They knew what. Like, here, okay, this is digress, but this always gets me. I always took, when I read my Superman mythos, that they had never been to Earth, they discovered Earth, and they sent him there because they knew he would survive. If I was an alien, Kryptonian, and I came to Earth to visit, and I found out how these powers, I would stay. Just saying, season 7. Just throwing that out there. Let's continue.
No, that is definitely something that, well, it's been, I don't know, I think Smallville is the only one, is the only interpretation of the Superman universe where Kryptonians have been to Earth before. I know that in the, I believe it was J.J. Abrams' script for his Superman movie that Brett Ratner was going to direct in the early 2000s, and there was a whole backstory with Jor-El coming to Earth and that kind of thing.
I'm pretty sure there was. I have the script around here somewhere.
Oh, there you go. See, dust that thing off. But these were ideas that came about in the early 2000s because people just trying to think of, how can we do a new spin on the Superman story? But yes, I think the cleaner, more efficient, better story is to just say, yeah, Kryptonians have never been to Earth before. But like you said, we digress. But in the hospital here, Ryan and Clark are talking, and Ryan reveals to Clark that he knows what's wrong with him. He has a tumor. And because he had read Dr. Garner's mind, and he's a tumor in his head that's killing him, and that's what that's what gives him the abilities to read people's minds. But and this is really good acting from Ryan Kelling here, you know.
Oh yeah, because he's just got that the streak of tear, and Clark's like, well, guess I'll go tell the doctors. You're like, they know.
Yeah.
There's nothing they can do, and you're just like, dang. It grips you. It just holds you tight.
Well, this is a classic Superman. I mean, this is a trial that Superman always has to face in whatever interpretation is, like in Superman the movie, all those things I could do, all those powers, I couldn't even save him, right? When he was talking about his father in that movie. And this is what Clark has to deal with here. I mean, it doesn't matter how strong or fast he is, or he cannot save his friend from just life. And, Jonathan and Clark are talking about it in the next scene, and, he just can't save everybody, and then that's a part of it. And it's implied, and we don't know if this is true or not, but it would help kind of explain why Ryan got so bad so quickly, that all the experiments that Somerhalt was doing to him accelerated the tumor, which is like, it's the worst, right?
Exactly. I mean, because we know in the first scene, he didn't have the nosebleeds and everything. He didn't complain about the noise. Mm-hmm. Did you ever, mid-90s movie Phenomenon with John Travolta?
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing that movie, and when they revealed that it was a tumor that was like giving him, and that's kind of what I thought about, was just the idea of that just made me think of that movie, that it's a tumor and it's enhancing his brain, but it's going to kill him.
Right. It's we still don't know how the brain works. So that's one of the last like unmapped parts of the human body. So pseudoscience, you can always find a pseudoscientific way to say, oh, well, this thing in your brain is causing fill in the blank. Right. And you can kind of fly with it, So, but hey, it's not a meteor rock power, which is a nice change of pace for Smallville. Right. So.
I didn't want to jump to that yet, but yes, this is the reason I do really like this episode too. And we'll get there towards the end.
Sure. So then, Lana is at the torch looking up facts on child emancipation. And I was, my initial reaction to this was like, I was all ready to complain. Like, why is Lana at the torch looking this up on the internet? But I figured, okay, she's looking this up like to defy Nell and her choices of moving to Metropolis. So Lana doesn't want to do this at home. You know, maybe she could be seen, or Nell could see that she looked it up, you know. So I'm like, okay, I'll buy the fact that Lana is at the torch leading us up. And, you know, Chloe comes over to her and you know, is reading what she's up to. And Lana says that, you know, she had decided that, well, she did. She told Nell that she didn't want to go because, you know, Clark and her at the end of their conversation in the loft, Clark was like, don't go. You can find a way to stay if you want. And that sounds like that's what kind of pushed Lana over the edge to stand up to Nell and tell her that she wanted to stay in Smallville. But, you know, that's just too bad. Nell doesn't really seem to care. She's going to move with her anyway. I guess this conversation is a Bechdel test pass, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I thought of that as soon as I was watching this episode. I was like, holy cow, this passes the Bechdel test. I'm like, they're talking not about a boy. And I like this because, what was it you talked about before? Like, just the friendship of Lana and Chloe, how it kind of, like, comes out of nowhere. And I like this because it feels like a natural progression of them just building on their friendship. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I can go with this.
Right. So they don't tell us what they're going to do quite yet, though, right? They leave us in suspense because Lana's like, well, I've tried every avenue. I don't know what to do. This could take a year and a half. And by that time, blah, blah, blah. And Chloe's like, well, there is one other option. And then we kind of like, they both smile and we cut away. We never find out until the end of the episode what this means. But we can get into that because I have some thoughts on that, too, at the end when it's revealed what the solution is. But meanwhile, you know, Clark has gone to the mansion. Alexis found a researcher, Dr. Burton. Wait, I'm like, is this a Batman reference, right?
Yeah. We could have done Dr. Donner.
Yeah. Because, you know, in Batman Forever, the doctor at Arkham Asylum at the end, played by Odo. Yeah. Rene Aja-Benoit. That's Dr. Burton. A reference to Tim Burton, the director of the first two Batman movies from the 80s and 90s. But anyway, Dr. Burton, right? He's some, you know, specialist and whatever. Apparently, according to Lex's research, this is the guy that Clark needs to find. And, you know, there is a little back and forth here between Clark and Lex, because Lex is like, Clark, I looked at the medical files, and it looks like, you know, the tumor in Ryan's brain, you know, could cause ESP. He could read people's minds. And Clark immediately gets mad at him. He's like, oh, so you just, I know why you're trying to help him. You just want to use him like everybody else. And Clark, what do you think about that? Do you think there was a level of Lex that was thinking that? Or I think Lex was, as you said, trying to be the good guy. I think he was completely altruistic here for a change.
I go with that because I think in the earlier seasons here, there's still a struggle in Lex. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you sit down and you can argue the case, maybe if Clark and him had been more open and honest, maybe Lex wouldn't have gone as dark. Mm-hmm. But you see the manipulation from Lionel. You see Clark and him have their ins and outs, and that pushes Lex over the edge. So I look at it as he was genuinely trying to help Ryan.
Right.
But then when he saw that, maybe Lex might have been figuring out maybe that's why he was at Summerholt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe there's something else going on with Ryan and we need to look at. And that would explain, you know, Lex is probably thinking, because he said earlier, like, Ryan's really intuitive. So, you know, I don't think Lex has stepped into I can exploit him as much as still trying to help him. I want to give Lex the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, really. I agree. I'll be better than Clark here and give him the benefit of the doubt, right? Well, and then, you know, another thing that Lex relates to Clark here is, like, you know, because Clark's like, oh, I'm not going to let him die. I'm going to save him. And Lex is like, look, Clark, you know, when my mother was dying, I spent all this time researching and trying to figure out ways that the new treatments that might help her. And when I realized the most important thing I could have done was spend time with her, and I wasn't there when she passed, and don't make that same mistake, you know? And it's, you know, that's really just real talk between Lex and Clark. They're not talking about lies and secrets and Kryptonian symbols, right? They're just talking about real life stuff, you know?
It's more of a believable episode in the sense of just how the people relate to each other.
Mm, yeah, very true. And ultimately, this conversation leads to the most extensive and impressive super speed sequence in the entire show, I think. Tyler, what did you think about this?
I wrote down here, run, Clark, run. Because, and what I think's funny is he's running to get to the doctor, but yet all he ever runs is back roads and fields, and then all of a sudden he shows up at the airport.
We get a great tour of Canada, right?
Yeah. Well, we get that at the end too.
Yeah, no, that's true. So he runs to Hub City, which is where Dr. Burton is, and that in DC Comics, that is the home of the Question, the superhero
and
of the Question.
He's one of those characters I'm surprised hasn't shown up yet in, I mean, the modern TV verse right now, and I'm surprised it never got referenced in Smallville again. I mean, we got Booster Gold. We couldn't have got the Question.
Well, yeah, I think it's a just a matter of time before he shows up on like the CW verse, right? I mean, we're getting characters like Wild Dog and Ragman on Arrow. I think we can get the question.
I think the question's good enough to come on and be a long-term partner character. I mean,
well, he would fit best in the world of Arrow for sure, but yes. But we'll see. But yeah, so the question lives in Upcity. But yeah, so this is very impressive though, and the showrunners thought it was so impressive they decided to use this entire sequence again next year in Extinction. So so we'll talk about that more in depth in that episode. I always find that humorous. And Smallville doesn't do that very often, right? I think the most famous reuse of stock footage is President Lex. Like they really, really milk that and the stock footage from Terminator 3. They use that as much as they can. But you know, the Flash, for example, I couldn't tell you how much stock footage they use for Barry Allen running around, which is fine. Because do I really need a new shot every episode of Barry running? No, of course not. But it's just very obvious. Yeah, it's just like, oh, there he is.
The exact same thing. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So no, this is really cool. We see super speed. We see slow mo. We see all the tricks. We see like Hark super speed up at the camera. Like, because this, remember, folks, this is before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is before the CW verse. I mean, this is cutting edge stuff we had never seen Superman do in live action before, and that was one of the great appeals of the show. In addition to all like the mythology and the, you know, the teenager stuff, and you know, Smallville had so many cool elements, cool draws to it. One of the big draws was seeing these Superman abilities in live action for the first time, like to their full potential, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, like you talked about, just the redesigning of the heat vision, I thought was great, and you know, one thing Smallville did that I feel like not a lot of, I don't think any other Superman, I'm trying to think right now, is like, well, Supergirl did, but the speed, like him just running fast, moving fast, you know, like I'm thinking right now, like I don't remember seeing it in a lot of other Superman iterations, like really to this potential. Like he might move real quick to take off running or whatever, or I mean to fly, but he can do regular things very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure Lois and Clark probably showed it a few times, but being on a 90s budget, I'm not near as knowledgeable about Lois and Clark as any other interpretation of Superman, honestly. So
it's like, you know, he could do things really fast, like run and save somebody before people notice, like run and stop someone from being hit by a twister before anyone would notice that he was gone.
Everybody has their two cents on that, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I just like to bring it up again because I'm just like, I understand what you were going for, but you didn't sell me on it, like a heart attack.
No, I follow you. No, I think each side of that argument has a legitimate argument. As you're saying, he runs through all of Canada and then he stops at this airport. This is the weakest part of this episode, just the logic here. So, you know, Lex had set up the fact that Dr. Burton was leaving the country today. He's going to be gone for 6 weeks, wasn't going to be back. And so, like, case closed, right? He was not going to be around to help Ryan, and Clark was not going to accept that. So that's why he super sped to Hub City to stop him, goes to the airport, goes up to the plane, gets in front of the plane. It's like, whoa, stop. Right? Into the runway, which is just kind of ridiculous. And then the doctor gets out of the plane, right? He's like, what's the meaning of this? Who are you? It's just, I found this all very hard to suspend my disbelief. I don't know about you, Tyler.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have liked it better if he would have got him as he was walking out towards the plane.
Yes. I mean, it's exciting.
Airport.
I mean, it's exciting, but it's completely illogical.
Yeah. Like, if he would have got him in the airport and he's like, look at this, please. And I mean, and of course, this is one of those things where I was waiting for the Lex scene to be like, how did you get there so fast, Clark? Right. How did you make it back? Like,
I'm just lucky, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I drove all night, Lex. Well,
that's the thing. That's the thing when Clark shows up at these places, right? Obviously, he hasn't used a car because he's super sped over there. Everyone's going to be like, so, Clark, how'd you get here? Or it's like, oh, I'll see you later. I'm going to go walk back to my car. I parked pretty far away. Like, what? I just want to think about what excuses he has to use. Obviously, he could just get on the plane and fly back. Right, to Smallville with Dr. Burton here. And so, yeah, it is funny because Clark's like, oh, he's like, who are you? What's the meaning of this? Oh, I'm Clark Kent. Oh, will you look at these? My friend is sick and he needs your help. And would you just please look at these folders? And then the police show up or the airport security show up and like, put your hands in the air. He's like, sir, please just look at these folders. And so Dr. Burton looks at it and he's like, wait a minute.
Where's your phone?
Yeah. It's just the most dramatic thing to say. It's like, oh, wow. Okay, well, sure, jump on, kid. We're gonna go save your friend. It was just a very odd moment to back and forth there.
During this part, there's a cut of Lex talking with Ryan.
Yes.
This is one of my favorite quotes from Lex, where he says, and you're talking about Develicus and Warrior Angel, because he says, why do you think Develicus became evil to Lex? And Lex says, the road to darkness is a journey, not a light switch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Lex's whole story right there.
Mm-hmm.
He just, it's little things here and there that builds up to eventually he crosses and becomes, because of everyone around him, what they did to him. And I think that's how you become the villain without even realizing you're the villain. So he, like he said, later on, he says, I am the villain of this story. And so I think that's just a beautiful setup right there.
Yeah, Lex and Ryan are talking about, and they're telling us, too, because we don't know about this Warrior Angel mythology. You know, I think you and I talked about it when we did Stray for last season, Tyler, but I don't think they mentioned Develicus in Stray, did they?
I don't think so.
Okay, because it's very easy for these episodes to kind of blur together, because, you know, they're both on that VHS tape, so. They invent Develicus here, the Lex analog, right? Because Develicus and Warrior Angel are best friends until Develicus turned against Warrior Angel and swore to destroy everything he loved and stood for and all that. And this is a great just a way to examine Lex, you know, through another lens. And Ryan, of course, because he warned Clark about Lex at the end of Stray, so be careful, Lex. He has a darkness that he hides from the world. I see Ryan as like questioning Lex about this to kind of help maybe have Lex question himself, because you're right, he asked him like, why do you think he turned evil? And, you know, and Lex also says, he says the road to darkness is a journey, not a light switch, as you said. And then he also says, I'm not sure, he probably wasn't aware of it, right? Which is another, like, yes, that's what's going on here with Lex, right?
In the redo episode, like, you talked about the osmosis from our parents and our behavior, and about how Lex was doing the same thing of Lionel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just one of those things of learned behavior. So, like, you know, in a latter part of this episode where Lex is talking with Mayor Tate, you know, and he has the video showing about corruption and everything, you know, he's not doing it as a way of getting what he wants from the mayor, so as about the plant, as much as he's doing it just to bring to light what this mayor's actually doing. So in his mind, he's doing it for the right reasons and doing something good. And later, I mean, later season Lex, he'd be doing that just to get what he wants.
Yeah, you know, ultimately, Lex Luthor, Mike Rosemont's Lex Luthor, the best part of this series, ultimately. And I felt like they did a good job transitioning him to the dark side without just being, you know, a light switch, right? I wasn't a fan of, like, the Clark-Lana-Lex triangle being such a huge role in that. I would have preferred a more ideological differences between Lex and Clark. That's probably my one complaint about their journey of Lex Luthor to darkness here. But on the whole, ultimately, he did, I mean, an excellent job.
I would have preferred Lana just stayed with Lex.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would have preferred, like, Lana's story mirror Lex's a little bit more, to where if Clark had been more open and honest with her, she wouldn't have had as much anger and animosity towards him. And that when she married Lex, like, they stayed together. It was like a power couple against Clark.
I thought that as well. I have many thoughts of like how they, because, yeah, I mean, they did a couple of mixed steps on every character here, I feel, but Lana probably more than the most. And you always think like, okay, what could they have done differently? Like, I thought maybe she could have been the Gwen Stacy, you know, and died in Reckoning, you know, and she would have been the Gwen Stacy of Clark's life. Or, you know, she could have stayed with Lex, and that would have been like, like you said, that the power couple, but then Lex would never truly go too far to kill Clark or Superman because he knew that Lana still cared about him and all. You know, lot of, you know,
they could have just killed Lana like in season 8.
Yeah, I don't know. They could, they could have done something
or
like
season,
that.
Like when they could have had something where Lex died in season 7, supposedly. So did Lana, but, you know, they weren't able to bring her back like they did Lex.
Mm, yeah. I mean,
that's jumping too far ahead. Spoilers.
that's all we do is jump too far ahead on this show, man. But yeah, you're right.
We look at what they did and what could have been done.
Exactly.
Because I think that would have been a stronger story. Because, like you talked about in the previous episode, about how, you know, Clark's destiny was with Lois. And they, instead of making it that him and Lana just didn't work out, they made it so that theirs was like a physical, like they couldn't be together no matter what, instead of making it more of like Clark's choice not to be with her.
Mm-hmm. All we do is jump too far ahead on this show. That's what it's a retrospective podcast, right? That's what we do.
Yeah, this show's been out long enough. People can watch it before they listen. And then we get another lesson from Lex. We all know how we love Lex's lessons about Winston Churchill. When America was bombed at Pearl Harbor, Winston Churchill busted out some champagne and said, "We've won the war."
We get our second Mayor Tate scene here, and Lex defeats him with the power of history. he shows, as you had referenced just a little bit ago, Tyler, you know, to kind of wrap up our subplot here with Lex and Mayor Tate, Lex has put together this political commercial about, you know, hey, it's political season, so. And just a negative political ad against Mayor Tate exposing, or at least bringing to light his corruption. And which, you know, it did surprise me that Smallville has a corrupt mayor. You know, you think Smallville is like the Andy Griffith Show, right? Everybody's, you know, everybody's howdy doody and, you know, on the level, but I guess not. But hey, it's Superman for the 21st century. But, you know, Lex shows in this ad and Tate gets mad at him, kind of threatens him. And then Lex goes on his soliloquy about, you know, how after the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor, Winston Churchill opened up champagne and said, "We have won the war," because, you know, America's like a boiler pot and there's no telling how much heat it can generate and all that stuff. So that was cool. I mean, that was classic Lex Luthor, right?
That's the Lex that I like. That's when you're cheering for Lex as your hero. You got two big scenes in this one. Lex shows up and stops the doctor with his papers from his lawyers. And then right there, stopping the mayor, you're like, yeah, Lex is the hero of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, he really is. And he doesn't get enough credit. And so definitely that's why he turns to the dark side.
I'm just glad that it wasn't like, oh, this emancipation process could take up a year. I'll go ask Lex if maybe he knows some people to help speed it along.
Oh man, yeah, he could have solved all the problems of this episode, right? So that's the end of Mertia here, and I thought that we would get more like a follow up to this because it seems like it's setting things up for, you know, later this season, but apparently it's not because we don't see Mertia again until season 3. So I don't know if it was just it's one of those plot lines that just decided to drop because they got lost in the shuffle of all these other things they were trying to balance. Or if it was like an availability thing with William B. Davis. Although I think that X-Files was over by now, so he should have been available. So I don't know. I really wish they would have gone more into this. Of course, and then as we mentioned before, they do go way deep into politics in season 5 with all the characters. So anyway, but that's Mayor Tate here. And anytime we get a great Lex Luthor history lesson is a win for me. But, you know, we go to the hospital now, and Clark is talking to the Kents about Ryan is in surgery, and Dr. Burton has come to Smallville to do the surgery, and they're very proud of him. Although I will say, you know, at the beginning of this episode, the Kents made a big deal about, hey, Clark, you went about this the wrong way when he broke Ryan out of Summerhold, right? And I thought they could have continued that theme, because clearly he went about this the wrong way as well, running up to a plane. Like, the ends justify the means, I guess, or whatever, but I don't know. Like, I felt like they could have been, I really expected Jonathan to be like, well, son, you know, you could have gone about this differently. But no, they're just all very positive, and they're very happy that Dr. Burton's there working on Ryan.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think I've been more proud of you. I'm like, seriously? And then I'm like, I'm sitting there going back through every episode of season 1. Like, I'm like, I guess maybe because it had to do with somebody that was other than related to them, or, like, I mean, Ryan's a close friend. He says he considers him like a brother, so why wouldn't Clark do this?
Right.
I was just like, really? Now you're proud of him? Not when he saved you from the being crushed together by the corn, ripped open the silo and saved you?
Right.
Anything like that? I'm just saying. Parents, man.
Well, Clark also talks to Lana at the hospital. She comes, you know, check on Ryan and tell Clark that, and we get our big reveal here that Lana and Chloe are moving in together because Chloe and her dad have offered to let Lana stay with them until she finishes high school. So there you go. And Clark asks her, Nell's cool with that? Lana says, not really, but she agreed to it. So what do you think of this development for Lana and Chloe here, Tyler?
Like I said, I think it's neat because their friendship's kind of coming together in a more natural way. Like that Chloe would even think of suggesting this. It gives them a story that's not Clark related. So, I mean, it's not like Lana approached Chloe like, hey, Chloe, do you think I could stay with you? I mean, it really was Chloe's idea, and we were able to get rid of Nell, so she's no longer part of the picture. But like you said, it shrinks the universe. I mean, we didn't even get a scene of like Chloe's dad and Chloe talking.
Yeah. Well, so, or a scene like enough. Forgive me if I forget, but I believe this is the last time we see Nell.
Yeah.
Lana's wedding.
I think so. Yeah.
Pete got a goodbye scene. We could at least give Nell a goodbye scene, right? I mean, that's a big deal. Like, she's lost both of her parents, and now her aunt moves off to Metropolis with her fiancé. I mean, like, no wonder Lana is so screwed up because she's had all these things happen to her. You know, crazy supernatural stuff, family stuff. I mean, I don't know, man.
Especially later when, like, she breaks her leg and...
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Like, her support. Like, where's your support, girl?
Yeah. I'm sure Aunt Nell sent her an email or something.
Text message. just says, "You okay?"
So Clark does say, "Oh, so you and Chloe are roommates, huh?" And Lana's like, "Yeah, never saw that coming, did you?" Clark says, "Not in a million years, and neither did we." So because yes, they have slowly built up a friendship over this season, but I don't know. Like I do feel ultimately this is like way big universe shrinking, and I liked how they at least characters had their own lives going on before this, and now I mean. I forget. I guess when they blow up Chloe and Gabe at the end of season three, and then Lana moves to Paris or whatever, I guess after she comes back, is that when she moves into the Talon? Because I don't really recall exactly the specific order. But I guess she, to my point being, I guess she lives with the Sullivans all the rest of this season and season three, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to go back and watch season three and kind of really... pay more attention to that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm pretty sure there's some things that happened that I don't know if would make sense.
So you know, that's that. And I think everyone, at least the show's, you know, self-aware enough to recognize how just that absurd that might sound on the surface, especially to Clark. And I guess that's another way of kind of maybe putting a roadblock up to Clark and Lana getting together. Because, you know, if you got one girl that likes you, and but you like the other girl and the roommates. I mean, I don't know, man. There's like a code. There's a code somewhere in there. So this scene ends on a kind of a cute note, but then the Kents come out and things quickly turn dark because, you know, they're very upset. And basically the operation was not successful and Ryan is still going to die. So Clark goes in to talk to Ryan and Ryan's reading a Warrior Angel comic book. It has the Aerodrome on it. And, you know, it's one of Lex's comic books. So Ryan says, "Hey, give this back to Lex." And Clark's like, no, you give it back to him yourself. Because Clark is still, like, in denial about this. You know, he still thinks that there's a way to save Ryan. There's other doctors and there's this and that. And Ryan says, "No, Clark, look, this is it, man. You have to accept it. And, you know, you did buy me a few more days and I want to spend it with my friend." You know, so this is good stuff. For this episode, like, what it lacks in, like, I mean, it has its ridiculous parts, like we talked about, like Clark on the runway with the plane and all that, just absurdity, right? But it makes up for it in the feels, right? Because there's so much good stuff here, you know. And I've said this before. Tom Welling, I think, plays Clark, really excels at playing Clark when he's around kids, because you see that big brother mentality that Superman, you know, has. Like the Superman is the whole world's big brother, right? And we can all look up to him as like our example, and he wants to be there to take care of us. And that is so on display here when Clark deals with kids. And we see it later on the show, and we see it especially with Ryan in his episodes. So you know, Ryan does say that he wished he had his own aerodrome where he could, you know, be high above the world and forget about his problems. And this encourages Clark to get a hot air balloon. And they go on a hot air balloon, right? What'd you think of that?
I thought that was awesome. There's our tour of Canada we were referencing. But my thought was, I wonder if there was a scene here where Clark's like, hey, Lex, can you hook me up with a hot air balloon? Sure.
You have to assume. You have to assume that's where they get all this stuff, right? I mean, the kids, literally the farm is on the verge of bankruptcy. So Martha's working two jobs, and Jonathan's working at the farm, and so is Clark. And, you know, I'm sure any kind of extracurricular activity has to come from Lex.
Exactly.
But you know, speaking of Lex, Ryan did mention Lex again in his scene with Clark here at the hospital. Because he had said, you know, at the end of his episode Stray, he said, be careful of Lex. You know, he's a darkness that he hides in the world. But, you know, Ryan leaves Clark with a more positive spin on it here. Because he's like, I know last time I told you that, you know, Lex has some darkness. But, you know, keep an eye on him for me. You know, promise me you will. And he kind of leaves him on a more positive place, right? Because you could interpret, you know, his last words of warning to Clark for Lex. Like, oh, man, this guy's a bad seed. But it's like, look, just keep an eye on him for me. And that's something that Clark does the rest of the series. And you know, I'll say this, you know, I didn't cry in this episode. I didn't have enough life experience here. I was only like 16. So it's funny, you know, when you're a kid, it seems like you cry things, and you're older, you cry things. But like when you're like your teenagers in your early 20s, you're like, yeah, whatever, right?
For most things, yeah. This did get me a little bit just because, like I talked about before, I do have a younger brother. And all the times that Clark referenced it, Ryan, like being his younger brother. So it did get me a little bit. But yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, there's so many times your stuff, you're like, you cry, and then like it's like you get callous and you don't care anymore about anything. Then I was like, I'm in that backswing now, like having a kid, getting a little older.
Yeah.
You watch stuff, you see stuff, you're just like, dang, I can't watch this. It's hard to even watch the beginning of Superman movies when they're like jettisoning Cal away. I'm like, no, I know what that's like. The idea, I can't do it.
Right. No, that life experiences inform your emotional reactions to things. It's so true. So, you know, but all that to say that, you know, when Ryan makes Clark promise he's going to look out for Lex. when I'm gone, which is, oh, it's so sad to hear him say that. You know, I thought of the episode Fracture where Clark is in Lex's mind, you know, and there's little Alexander. And he's like, I'm always going to be there to look out for you and stuff. And I was like, man, I cried during that episode because I was like, oh, man, I did.
You like little Alexander. You want to like just protect him and be his friend. You're like, right. I'll be your friend, Alexander.
But you know, because Clark has to say goodbye to him, that, and he's just in this never-ending battle, no pun intended, right, between, you know, young Alexander and, like, President Lex, the evil Lex Luthor in Lex's soul there, you know, and Clark promises he'll always be able to look out for him, and that's, man, and that I'm sure it was unintentional, but it almost was a callback to this episode where Ryan asked him to do that, so that's what that made me think of, and I didn't cry here, but I did cry then. So, but yeah, so they're up on the air balloon there, and we get the song Angels and Devils by Dishwalla, which was a very effective in song. I feel it's very melancholy in song here, and they're just, you know, like we referenced, I think, at the very beginning in our conversation here, Tyler, Ryan says to Clark, he's like, hey, don't be angry or sad. I mean, you changed my life, you know, and it's true. And that's like, oh, man, it's in the feels, right?
This part, I kind of wish the episode would have closed on this.
Yes, yes.
Instead of the little tag we get where it's just Clark at the hospital staring at the empty bed with the Warrior Angel comic.
It was a little odd, right? Because you feel like, oh, this is the end, right? But I guess they really had to show you that Ryan had died. Like, you could have just known that he had a few days to live, and obviously he died after this, but they just really wanted to show you that ending. Because it almost feels like almost any other episode of Smallville would end with that, you know, wide shot of the balloon, much like the end of Nicodemus or something, right? The wide shot of the windmill. But instead, we get an end that's like the end of the episode they did go with reminded me of Cool, where Clark's in the hallway and then everybody's like walking by in slow motion. And look, I get it because it is a powerful moment where he's taking up the comic books. You're like, oh man, that means Ryan's gone. You know, he's taking up the comic books and walking out and looking at the bed. And you know, we've all experienced that kind of thing, having to like clean out a room of a loved one who has passed on. You know, that's tough stuff. But I feel like the emotional high was really up at the balloon where Ryan hugged Clark, and maybe they should have left it that way.
Yeah, going out like that is more of a tribute to Ryan's character. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like that little part at the end, if it had been longer, like you said, maybe in another episode or something where it had been longer and there was something after it and it was more about Clark dealing with it, much like the episode in season 5 where Clark's father's watch gets stolen.
Mm, yeah.
And the whole thing is him dealing, like, it goes back to him dealing with the loss of his dad. Like, maybe if the next episode had started with that scene. And it was all about Clark still dealing with the fact that he couldn't save Ryan, even though he did things in his power and out of his power. And just, you know, really enforcing that you can't save everyone. And just kind of, and then there's the episode that wasn't written. There it is, Zach. Yeah. You and me. The next episode that wasn't written was Clark. That was the beginning right there. Clark dealing with that, and then Lex and Mayor Tate. There it is.
And it would be called Loss. Right, Clark's loss of Ryan, and then Mayor Tate losing the election. Man, wow, look at us, man.
Boom.
Oh man, and there's not an episode of Smallville called, believe it or not, there is no episode called Loss, at least unless I'm forgetting one. So,
but if look for right that special PDF script coming from Tyler.
I think we can all agree that would have been a better episode than Dichotic, but we'll get to that next week.
What do you think?
It's peaceful. I thought you were afraid of flying.
Not when I have you here to protect me.
Thanks, Clark.
For what?
This moment? It's perfect. To a place that fills us all inside. Well, I don't want you to be angry or sad. You changed my life. You're gonna change a lot of people's lives, Clark. Promise me you'll never give up. Fighting all the demons will
take time. I promise. We'll take
time. Ryan got an 8.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5, and he kind of zeroed in on our what we like so much about, you know, the Lex Ryan stuff and Deviliquus. And here's what Neil Bailey had to say. He said, "The discussion about Lex's evil, the hints as to the future, these things are what make this show great. The large criticism is that without any real fear that any of the characters will die or change beyond the most cursory, the show is a waste of time. I disagree, simply because of the new angles that can be and are cast upon the characters we come to know and love. How would Lex react to a caricature of his future self in a comic book? This is prime stuff and well executed. So I agree. I mean, we have that going on. We got the feels going on with Ryan and Clark. I mean, there are some goofy things in this episode that we were joking about, but just the feels, right? That elevates it, and I really think this is a great episode. So what about you, Tyler? How would you rate this episode?
I'm going with an A, and I like it for the honest relationship between Clark and Lex. There's no lies like or hidden things really going on between the two of them other than Clark's subtleties about how he got Ryan out. There's no kryptonite. There's no talk of meteor rock. There's no freak of the week. It shows a different side of Clark and just the Kents. And of course, Ryan is just such a strong, like I said, sympathetic character. I feel like everyone in this episode does a great job. Lex has a great little story. Even Lana and Chloe developing their friendship, passing the Bechdel test, is a positive. So I love this episode. I think it's one of the best ones.
Oh, yeah, I agree, man. I would give it a solid A myself. And, you know, I feel like a lot of episodes, I think I was on a stretch here, a bunch of A minuses. But any minus I would have given this episode is replaced by the emotions that it, you know, calls
back. I mean,
back.
The only, the minuses, like if I had to give minuses to this episode, it's Clark on the runway. Yeah. And then the little tag at the end, the little extra ending. Mm-hmm. That's really the only thing I could say negative. But other than that, I mean, I think it's a extremely strong episode. It's one of those that stay with you and shows that human side of Superman.
Well, that's where Smallville excelled the best when it made, because that was its angle on Superman, right? Just the human side of Superman, right? And the episodes with Ryan really exemplify that more than most episodes in the show. So it does what Smallville does best. And for that, yeah, we both give it A's. So well done, show.
And way to follow this episode up.
Oh, man. Yeah, we'll get to that next week. Oh, boy. What? But, you know, one last order of business, Tyler, before we wrap up today. We have our series tally board. So we have a couple of additions to the series tally board this week. We have the episode title, said in episode. That's a plus one because Ryan. Of course, many people say Ryan. It's Ryan's name, you know. Those are always a shoe-in. It's a slam dunk, right?
Couldn't get around that one.
Episodes like Perry, Zod, things like that. So that brings us to 9 so far. And then we have a plus one for our hospital visits because obviously Ryan ends up at the hospital at the end. That's a plus one. So we're at 15 so far. So we are, just for the record, we are 29 episodes in to Smallville. We've had 15 hospital visits. So, whew, it's going to be a lot. I'll be curious to see if we make 100 by the end of the show, right?
Oh, God, we have to.
And then, of course, as we mentioned a couple times now, this episode is a Bechdel test pass between Lana and Chloe talking about, you know, where Lana's going to live now that Nell's moving on. So that is always good to see. And that is that, man. That's going to do it. So great conversation, Tyler. I enjoyed it for a great episode as well. We've had a couple of stinkers in recent, you know, season 2 started out excellent, had a couple hiccups, kind of got back on track with Lineage, and now another home run with Ryan, so...
I mean, you're going to have that when you're looking at 20-some episodes. You're going to have some that are a little off, a little filler here and there. As long as the majority are positive, that's all that matters.
Absolutely, man, absolutely. So, Tyler, if people want to find you on the internet, man, where can they find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at JTYPatrick or at Krypton Report. Krypton Report is my podcast I do. It started as just a Supergirl podcast, but it's pretty much all things Superman, Supergirl related. We talk about Smallville, but not like this, because this is Zach's thing. So,
so real quick before you go, what did you think of Superman on Supergirl?
Oh, dude, let's see. The whole time he was on, I had a big goofy smile on my face.
Mm-hmm. Same here, man. Same.
My wife just looked at me, and I was just like, I felt like a little kid again watching Superman on TV. I mean, every issue, oh, I shouldn't say issue, like I thought he was a little young. But then that whole just the line about Kryptonians age slower on Earth. Perfect. Summed it up. I'll take it. Move forward. Like, his Clark was great. It was believable. It wasn't too over the top. You could see that kind of Clark Kent being in the real world and just that slightly dorky person without being an exaggeration. but yet at the same time, his Superman was awesome. So, I mean, it's what we talked about in the last episode of Krypton Report. It's the best Superman-Clark combo we've had since Christopher Reeve. You can argue, I mean, like, the thing is, you can argue about Tom Welling because he was more of this transitional Clark.
Mm-hmm.
We got spots here and there of Superman and spots here and there of Clark that would come to be, but he never fully embraced both sides of the coin. I mean, you could argue that if you wanted to.
Right.
If you wanted to get really technical. you know, and then Dean Cain played a different kind of Clark and Superman. Being able to encompass the character and reflect more of a modern, yeah, Tyler totally nailed it.
Yeah, man, I cannot wait, and hopefully he will make more appearances on Supergirl moving forward, and hopefully, you know, we'll see more of him, because I can't wait to see him again. And I think they did a great job, you know, not upstaging Supergirl in her own show, and they were very, very careful not to do that. And, you know, I don't know, man, I mean, it'd be great to see a Superman spinoff show, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, I would even take if they were like, I always said, like, it'd be awesome if they did one of these shows. And I think Superman's one that they could do. Just do, give me a 6-episode or a 12-episode season, but put it in the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of people that are talking about. I know our friend Craig Byrne from Krypton Site feels the same way. It's like, look, I mean, just make it a mini series, a special event, you know, must see TV, and the ratings will come, man. Oh, it's so good, and I love seeing the Superman world expanded. You know, we got L Corp now, previously Luther Corp. You know, the whole Luthers, finally the Luthers are in the world of Supergirl. It's just, we're seeing this really fleshed out Superman world.
Yeah, Supergirl it started the first season rough, but it's just gone up ever since then.
Up, up, and away. I had to do it. So,
no, that's a great way to end the conversation. Just leave it at that. Just put that as the last thing that's said.
I know. Right? I wish I could, but I have to plug myself, Tyler. So,
just go back and add yourself in, and before you ask me where I'm at,
I could.
That's how you can do it.
We'll see. I might
do some editing tricks.
Well, you guys will figure out what I did when you listen to this episode. So, but yeah. As for me, you can find me at Moron Zach on Twitter. That's MoronZach. And as for the podcast, you can find us at Always Mallville on Twitter. That's Always Mallville with one S. And you can also find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Stay tuned next week when we talk about Dichotic. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. The angels, they burn inside for us. And are we ever going to learn to fly? The devils, they burn inside of us. And are we ever going to come back down, come around? I'm always going to worry about the things that could break us. Couldn't make us cry.